got to head into the studio of a well-known local artist, Brian Gilsenlider. He is one of several Creative Catalyst winners, and that is a grant from the San Diego Foundation given to some of the city's most interesting creative folks. And you know what? I'm just going to let him tell the story because I gave him a mic, and he just introduced me to the world of being a scent artist.
I'm Brian Gilsenlider, and we're at my studio in Talmadge. In front of me is about 9 months' worth of work, or parts of 9 months' worth of work, for a project that is called Olfactory Memoirs. And it's a project that combines literary arts, storytelling, specifically in the memoir form, with olfaction. And using the two, or creating a hybrid between the two in a way that allows a story to be told both through the sense of smell, which is unfamiliar to most people, and through conventional storytelling. At the preview reading, or at the preview performance that's happening on Saturday, the November 28th, and Sunday, November 29th, there's going to be four San Diego-based writers: Eva Friedlander, Krissa Broomer, Brian Thedell, and Anitra Carol Smith. And they've all written either poetry or prose memoirs of childhood. And so the only thing that unites these things, since they grew up in different parts of the country and are of different ages and genders, is that they're reflections of their childhood that are scent-based reflections. And so to correspond with their stories, I've created scent tracks or you know, discrete smells that can be pumped into and out of the room, kind of like the way a DJ would mix sounds at a party. I'll essentially mix these smells to coincide with the stories that are being told. This box right here has got, let's see, 5, 10, 15, 16, 17 smells, and it holds 25. There's going to be 28 smells in the event, so I've got a little bit more work to do. But it's kind of funny to look at this because it's about, you know, 4 inches by 4 inches by 4 inches, and it represents like about 6 months worth of work. And although each vial is maybe 12 milliliters, so, you know, not very much at all, the scent itself is relatively powerful. I'm looking at my wall right now, and basically, if you can imagine a storyboard for a film, this is somewhere in between a storyboard and almost like music notation, because what you've got here is each of the writers performing each of the memoirs, and then there's a verbal description of each of the scents and the order in which they arise in the memoir. And then the next column is the molecules that I'll use to design each of the scents. And then based on the fact that this is not like conventional perfume that gets sprayed on the body and you smell it, this is actually something that is pumped in and then pumped out in very discreet ways. So you don't smell very much at all, but if you're breathing, you're just getting a small trace amount of the smells. There's this other column called the infusion ratio, and that allows me to, once I've designed a scent, to actually figure out how much of a concentration needs to go into it, just so people can get their nose, you know, just a little bit into the scent. So one of the writers is talking about living for a time with his grandparents in rural Utah. And you can imagine like the kind of stereotypical grandparents' house, especially if it was a farming grandparents in the 1970s. So everything is very, very old, handmade, kind of DIY. There's an element of dust, and there are certain masculine and feminine smells. So to start off this this piece, I've created a scent of dust that has this dry but at the same time a little mildewy or musky smell to it. And then the next spot would be the very feminine old lady smell of the rose milk lotion that grandma uses. And so you can imagine that the dust fading away and this bright lactic rosy smell hitting you, and then immediately going away because somebody has just opened the door and a gust of cold wind blows in. So what's the scent of cold? And then when the door gets shut and the heater kicks back on, you know, what's the scent of warm once that kind of musky, dusty house starts to warm up again? So that sequence of four scents itself is beginning to tell a story in an olfactory way. As far as the chemistry is concerned, you learn enough of the chemistry to allow you to do what you want to do. It's probably not unlike a painter learning color theory. or a photographer or a digital imaging person learning, you know, subtractive or additive theory, respectively, you need to understand how properties work. And as far as the chemistry behind making sense, there are some things that you can learn that are just textbook science, and then there's a lot of things where you just got to pull your nose out of the book and make something. So, for instance, you want to smell something?
Yeah. So you're opening a tiny little bottle of clear liquid, giving it a little whiff, previewing it for me.
Do you have a good nose or a bad nose?
I've been called a super sniffer, so beware.
Okay. Now, I'm not going to tell you what this is, and maybe you can just tell me what it reminds you of. There's a little blotter with the scent on it. Hmm. Wet or dry?
Dry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not cueing any of my memory nodes, but yeah, sorry. Drawing a blank on this one.
Okay. That's okay. You got the dry part. There's a touch of kind of a cumin-y smell. And there's a story about a loved one, a former boyfriend who had passed. And she was describing his smell. Is just the odor of his body. So normally people think about like body odor is like something negative, which is kind of funny because everybody has it. But the way that she described it, she even talked about how they had parakeets, and she's like, even the parakeets liked his smell. You know, they would nibble on his armpit hairs. And so I was thinking, well, what's a dry body odor smell? And my sense is that when people pair that up. And that's the thing about smell, you know, when you think about coming out of a visual arts background, picture making, image making, in the visual arts is relatively old fashioned. Typically, if you're making imagery in the visual arts, there's like something attached to it, you know, allegory, metaphor, some kind of like self-referentiality. With the sense of smell, I found it kind of interesting because each of these things does and does not represent that which, you know, does and does not point that which it represents. Meaning that, like, I've got the smell of, like, a cardboard box. Now, if I put a cardboard box in front of you and you looked at it and you smelled it, and then you smelled the molecule that I have that smells like a cardboard box, it'd be a no-brainer. But if I put it in front of you and said, you know, what does that smell like? Right? Just like you smell your underarm and it smells like, you know, dry body odor versus smelling a scent strip where it could be, like, anything. And so this whole idea of to what extent is the sense of smell representational, there's still a lot of ideas to be argued out. So in terms of storytelling, it's up in the air right now.
You know, actually there is someone in our office who can't smell. Mm-hmm. She has no sense of smell. I don't know if you run into that very often, but I was talking to her yesterday about it, and I was kind of sad for her because, you know, like the smell of burning wood, which just started popping up as the temperatures have dropped recently, that for me just immediately takes me back to Colorado and my childhood and walking around outside while everyone had their wood-burning stoves going. And I think smell more than anything for me cues memories. Is that, you find that to be true for you and for other people?
Absolutely. It's one of those things where smell and the sense of smell and the sense of sound are both memory devices. You know, for a lot of people, just like you, actually, they'll have olfactory memories that are like almost hardwired into their DNA. For me, I actually have stronger triggers to sound, music. If I hear a song that I heard, you know, when I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old, I can immediately remember where I was and like all this peripheral information that was happening. But with the sense of smell as it relates to memory, it's really interesting because it'll take you back in time to that place and it will unleash like a bunch of peripheral imagery, you know, what temperature it was, you know, who was around you. What was said almost like verbatim to you when you remembered this memory. It doesn't necessarily tell the entire story, but the details that it does recall are just so crystal clear that, it's wondrous.
So for you, is this the first time pairing your sense with storytelling specifically? I know you've done a lot of different interesting things with your art form, but I feel like this might be a first for you.
I did a piece for the centennial at San Diego Art Institute that actually paired up storytelling with synths and with an art walk around the park. It was a collaborative project I did with a designer up in the San Luis Obispo area named Charmaine Bannock. But other than that, this has been really the first time where I tried to create this kind of transmedia storytelling. It really is pushing my boundaries because I'm a very collaborative artist, but the levels of collaboration in this project are mind-boggling because I haven't even talked about the collaboration with the engineer yet. All of this would be for naught if we couldn't actually have some kind of a technology to distribute the scents at the right concentration, right in the front of the nose of the audience at the right time. And that's not an easy thing.
All right, so I'm looking at the machine over here. Let's walk over and check it out. It's plastic and, well, not plastic, acrylic, right? Yeah. See-through acrylic.
So this is the prototype that I designed with Dave Gilarducci, and Dave has single-handedly built. And basically what it is a way of using a dry air collection and dispersal system to pump scented air through tubes into fans and to essentially get them right into the noses of the audience in very discrete levels. Very, 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 very softly scented air so that if you're just breathing naturally, you'll pick something up, but it won't be something that will be so distracting like somebody who's got a god-awful amount of perfume on that you can't pay attention to anything else. Obviously, we want people to pay attention to the reading itself, but with these small, subtle kind of ambient scents, you know, mixing with the text.
So this pumps smell in and also pumps it out. Is that what's happening with this?
Yeah. Well, so this is coming. This is an air compressor is fed into this tube, and there's Arduino and solenoids that are pushing the air into these chambers and out into a collection unit that has got the fan on it. And then basically, I would be at the back of the room. It's basically a joystick, and it allows me to control scent by scent by scent. So if we just focus on these two, if I press this, the air is coming out of here. And now if you stick your nose in there, you're probably going to smell something that approximates leather.
So can you, I know you don't want to give too much away, but can we just smell like one or two more of your scents that you've created here?
I'm working on this one, and I don't want to, how would you say it, profile you, but does this smell like weed?
Oh, yes. Okay. It didn't at first, but at the very end, yeah. At first it smelled sweet, and then it smelled like pot.
Yeah, I got to work on that, but it's troubling. It's one of the more troubling ones that I'm still working on. Let me show you a couple of them that are finished that are...
Wait, so it's difficult to make a smell that smells like weed?
Yeah. I mean... Yeah, just take my word for it. Because it's not like you would take a bunch of marijuana and like
blend it together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or make a tincture of it in alcohol. Because what people smell when they're smelling it is likely the burning of it. So you've got this kind of incense-y thing. Plus you've got the quality of the weed itself. Plus you might have environmental factors that go along with the weed. And so, yeah, I mean, it's relatively complicated. And there's the other thing too of the fact that I'm basically making it hyper real. You know, I'm making a version of it that leaves no room for interpretation. You know, like I want people to immediately understand that this is where it is. And in fact, when I get this right, it's supposed to be weed that's smoked in the 1970s on the boardwalk at Mission Beach. So basically, I've got this seaweed infused. A tincture that is supposed to subtly come in and out of the kind of skunky smell. And so that's what I'm still working on right now. Let me show you one that, okay, this is a good one. This was based on a story by a woman who grew up in the 50s in San Diego at a time when, you know, like San Diego was a completely different place. And so she was riding horses like all around Mission Valley, you know, where there's parking lots right now. And so there was a stable down there, and she was telling the story about, you know, coming in and as a little girl and what it smelled like to go past the hay and to be on the horse and the horsey smell. And then when the horse started to go past the country country clubs and kicking up, going from like kind of the dusty stable smell to kicking up the fresh green grass of the country club to the fresh air to the sea infused air, depending on which direction she was riding. So here is a smell of the hay, the horsey smell, the kind of leathery smell, very much like a stable. Let me put it on a blotter for you. I don't want to spill it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I guess some people must assume that to make the smell of hay, you just go get some hay and like grind it up. But you're telling us it's much more challenging than that.
Right. Because basically if you think about how regulated the perfume industry is, and trust me, it's extremely regulated. Yeah, I could go off on a tangent with that. These are all perfume grade materials that I'm working with. I'm working with them at much more diluted levels, as I mentioned. But these are all things that basically are, they come with health and safety statements that I have to work within. Like, for instance, the hay right there is a hay absolute that's made in France that is probably, I don't know, $75, $80 per quarter ounce. So it's a very expensive, highly refined material. It's very like luxurious to work with all this stuff, and I would imagine that perfumers are probably scratching their heads, wondering like, okay, well, why is this guy making the smell of a barn when he could be making, you know, couture fragrance? But it's not my thing.
So how did you get into the smell thing in the first place?
Oh, I'm not sure what was first. You know, when you're interested in something that's peripheral like that, it doesn't make sense to be involved in something that you didn't know that there was actually a subculture surrounding, you know. And when you're a young guy growing up, you know, a straight young guy growing up, you certainly aren't interested in perfume. You know, you're interested in skateboarding and surfing and doing things like that. But what I found was kind of interesting was I always thought that if something looked good, it probably smelled good too. And it used to like, well, I mean, it would get me in trouble with the ladies, but it would also get me in trouble like at museums, because I've loved museums ever since I was a little kid. And so I'd go up to the paintings, and when nobody was looking, or when I thought nobody was looking, I'd go and smell them just because I thought, God, they look so good. What do they smell like? And so I just kind of noticed like my whole life I've had this interest in the scent of things, and then combine that with a love of cooking and drinking and things like that. Those are all very olfactory cultures, but they're also cultures which blend all the senses. And that's something that hopefully if I make a contribution to contemporary art, it's one that talks about how, you know, why isolate the senses? Why not be sentient beings culturally? Because certainly most of us are in our day-to-day lives.
So next month you have something coming up in Chicago, and it's related to poetry. That's about all I know. Can you tell us more about what you have going on in December?
The Poetry Foundation, which is the oldest running national poetry organization in the United States, is curating a show called Volatile, with an exclamation point at the end of it. And it's a show of olfactory art that's curated by a professor at Columbia College Chicago named Deborah Riley Parr. She's assembled some really good art people who are working in the sense of smell. And so I really feel humbled that she had included me. And I'll be doing a piece that's a collaboration with a Dutch writer named Anna van Schuchtelen. And basically it's an idea that the sense of smell is durational in the way that a movie is durational. You know, it's a time-based art form, meaning that like as a complex scent wears away or evaporates, the molecules, you know, evaporate at different rates, so that I've constructed these smells that actually evaporate at very strategic rates. And so I collaborated with this writer where I gave her smells and I told her to smell them at intervals of like 15 minutes. And she wrote a multi-piece story for this smell. And so the viewers will come to the museum or to come to the Poetry Foundation and read her story and smell my scent. And then 15 minutes later, they'll smell it again and read a second part of the story. And an hour later, smell it a third time and read a third part of the story. And each time the scent changes just based on evaporation, and it changes radically. And so it's a completely new way of creating a hybrid between poetics and olfaction.
So people out there who are maybe for the first time thinking about olfactory art. So you're not alone. There's this whole movement. There's this whole world. Is it relatively small? Is it new? Can you just give us a better picture of more people out there like you?
It's new insofar as it was always troubling to art historians. How do you classify things that aren't easily archivable? So even though Marcel Duchamp made it, you know, the futurists made it, Dada and Fluxus artists used it. You know, the whole history of art from even before the 20th century, but from the 20th century to now, have used, especially the avant-garde strains of art in the 20th century have used olfaction. Only now are art historians actually saying, hey, I'm a sensory art historian, or I'm even an olfactory art historian. I'm going to go back through the canon and start finding these pieces and try to create a sense of their place in history, which is great because it leaves people like me and other people who work with olfactory hybrids in contemporary art domains. It makes us feel feel part of a tradition, which is important. You know, you don't want your audience to think that you're just choosing something because it is completely detached from any reference that they possibly could have, when in fact, you know, this is something that has just slid between the cracks because for a variety of reasons, but possibly mostly because the Western culture has such a bias against the sense of smell.
Because it's not easy to archive or sell, or because is that where the bias comes from? Is that what you're saying?
In part, but if you also think about the fact that even anthropologists who would go to non-Western countries in the early part and the middle part of the 20th century, they would like misuse evolutionary theory and basically go and document cultures that had amazingly articulate olfactory traditions and basically make a case that that's why they're lower or more inferior than us on an evolutionary totem pole, because they're relying on their noses more. As if the more astute we are as a species, the less we should rely on our nose, which is, you know, completely, completely ludicrous.
So in the hierarchy of senses, then, what is it? Sight? It's always sight. Is that the king?
The Enlightenment, right? Yeah, the Enlightenment. And so much, if you look at the idioms that we use in language, I see, you know, I'm enlightened, you know, versus, you know, that stinks. You know, almost always words that are associated with sight are about revealing something. And with smell, you've got much more sketchy references. And yeah, so the hierarchy of the senses would definitely have, you know, sight and sound on top and smell at the bottom.
All right. So before I go, can we just give one more thing a whiff?
Yeah. I've got dirty wet. I've got ocean air. I've got cold air. I've got cigarette breath. I've got pine forest. I've got soapy. I've got... cocoa vanilla tanning lotion.
Let's go with the tanning lotion. That reminds me of my mom. She used to slather herself up and go sit out on the porch before everyone was so worried about skin cancer. Mm. Aw.
That's nice. Yeah, I'll give you a little bit and you can send it to her if she wants to. Just kind of like, without the sun, you know, put on a heat lamp maybe and just put on a little tanning lotion.
That would be awesome. All right, well, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
The smell of gasoline.